This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Protocol for Life Balance, offering a wide range of professional-grade products using ingredients backed by strong scientific research. Among them, several stand out which can help support your body's healthy detoxification process, including Liver Detox Support, NAC, Chlorophyll, and DIM plus CDG. This suite of products aids in the elimination of certain environmental toxins from the body, supports healthy cellular reproduction cycles and liver function, and promotes healthy hormone metabolism. They're backed by solid scientific data and available now at drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. That's drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance for more information and to order. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today, because it's kind of an emergency, we're breaking precedent to have a long discussion about long COVID. COVID is one thing, but a lot of people are confident that they'll survive COVID. But the problem arises for many people who even have mild to moderate COVID, that they have long-term symptoms. It's called PASC, post-acute sequelae of SARS-CoV-2. That's the medical name for it. We're going to keep calling it long COVID or long hauler syndrome. Our guest is Dr. Leo Galland. He's done a deep dive on this subject. He's put this all together in a form that is a coherent action plan for people who suffer from long COVID. There's lots of free resources that he's generously made available at his website, drgalland.com. And in part one and two, we talked about, introduced a five-part program to ameliorate the symptoms of long COVID. So it starts with lifestyle. So what are we talking about here? We already talked about diet, and yes, a plant-based diet, lots of omega-3s, plenty of fiber, lots of polyphenols. That all helps. But what are the other components of a lifestyle program?
Okay. Well, there's sleep and exercise. And sleep is very important for recovery from COVID. Having COVID sometimes screws up the sleep cycle. If you should really try to keep regular hours, get to bed at the same time. A lot of common sense stuff. Don't stay up on your iPhone late at night. In fact, don't bring it to bed. Get off your laptop early enough. You need darkness.
Basic sleep hygiene.
Daylight during the day. Yeah. Basic sleep hygiene. And if you need sleep aids, use them.
And what complicates long COVID is that it sometimes causes sleep disturbances. It's kind of like when you have a flu, you have this restless sleep, you don't sleep well, and then you wake up exhausted, unrefreshed. So what are some of the things that can be used to deepen sleep, natural things, because we really don't want people taking pharmaceutical sleeping medications.
Right. I would start with melatonin, if melatonin doesn't leave you feeling too drowsy the next day. Because melatonin is also anti-inflammatory. And the anti-inflammatory effects have been found at doses of 3 to 10 milligrams. I personally can't take 3 milligrams. I'd be in a coma. But whatever dose you can take, if you have problems with sleep, and if you have problems maintaining your sleep, use a sustained release form. You can start with a half milligram and work up. Magnesium is very helpful for sleep, and so is glycine. So if diarrhea is not a problem, magnesium glycinate, the amino acid theanine, either on its own or combined with gabapentin with GABA, in this formula called Zen. Those are all things that can help you fall asleep.
Now, some of our patients are taking CBD, and you've noted in your research that there's actually a plausible role for the endocannabinoid system in long COVID, and that CBD may help relax people, it may deepen sleep, but it may also be good generally for long COVID.
Right. Well, CBD has been shown to enhance a hormone system, a regulatory peptide system called apelins, and apelins raise ACE2. And there's been some laboratory research looking at CBD's effects on a laboratory model of COVID-19, and it was very beneficial. And it worked through increasing levels of these apelins. And apelins then increase ACE2, and a lot of the benefits of the apelins are due to ACE2. So definitely CBD. The main issue there is getting a quality product and enough of a dose. You know, in this laboratory study, the equivalent human dose of CBD that would be needed would be 200 or 300 milligrams for a person to take. Well, I mean, it's hard to get above 30 to 40 milligrams with the
There are now some products over the counter that are 50 and 100, so it's attainable with some of the newer formulations. CV Sciences makes one that is 50, and I think they're making 100. So, part two, you know, getting beyond life. Oh, you want to talk about exercise? Okay, so you're pooped. So it's kind of paradoxical. How could exercise be beneficial here if you're suffering from exhaustion and fatigue?
A lot of the fatigue and exhaustion involves deconditioning. So exercise is important for reconditioning. But here's what's critical. If you crash after exercising, so the next day you have to rest, you did too much. You should only exercise to a level that allows you to do the same amount the next day. If you go above that, you're doing too much, and you're contributing to the inflammation.
Mm-hmm. So it's sort of graded exercise. It's kind of like, you know, do 20% of what your capacity is and work up from that.
Right. And if 20% winds up, if you need a day off, you did too much.
Yeah.
And I think that's the important principle to follow there. Okay, so then, and we talked about diet in the last segment. So supplements that can enhance ACE2 and reverse the inflammation. Three that are really at the top of my list: vitamin D, curcumin, and resveratrol. And they have multiple beneficial effects in prevention and treatment of COVID-19 and in the effects of the long haul syndrome. The dose of curcumin dose of vitamin D, I'll start with that one because it's inexpensive and it's been shown to be really important in COVID-19. That's going to vary from person to person. Usually for an adult, that's going to be 2,000 to 6,000 units a day. It's best absorbed taken with your main meal because you need food to absorb it. And it's anti-inflammatory. It's been shown to help. Good vitamin D levels in blood have been shown to be protective against severity of COVID-19. Curcumin. In the human clinical trials of curcumin, and there are a lot of them, the benefits generally occur, anti-inflammatory benefits and other benefits, including improvement in cognitive function, doses of 750 to 1,000 milligrams a day. Now, if you're using a nano curcumin model product, maybe you can use half that dose or a liposomal. But that's basically what you need. And there are two randomized controlled trials of curcumin for treatment of COVID-19 that were just published, from India and one from Iran. And they showed significant benefits in people who were sick with COVID-19 in decreasing severity of disease, mortality, the need for supplemental oxygen, et cetera. I mean, the results were just as good as with any drug, better, actually. So curcumin, I think, is a real important component for prevention, treatment, and reversal of long COVID. Resveratrol has been proposed as a treatment for COVID-19. It definitely has antiviral activity and anti-coronavirus activity, but there haven't been clinical trials published as yet. In the clinical trials of resveratrol for anti-inflammatory and other benefits including cognitive enhancement. In humans that have been published, and there are close to 300 overall, the doses used vary widely from as little as 75 milligrams to as much as 2,000 milligrams a day. And even doses of 75 milligrams a day have been shown to have positive effects. I generally, in my practice, have been giving people 400 to 600 milligrams a day. And if you can get a liposomal form of it, it is likely to be better absorbed and more bioavailable. Those are really critical. Oh, and when it comes, fish oils may also enhance
ACE2.
ACE2, and they do that indirectly in the same way that CBT does, through the apelin system. Administering fish oils to humans, there's a clinical trial of elderly men with heart failure, giving them just 1,200 milligrams of EPA plus DHA per day, raise the apelin level in blood.
And of course, DHA can be beneficial for the brain and would be helpful for cognitive recovery.
Right, right. Although when it comes to the blood vessels, EPA seems
to be superior.
The superior form. And for mood, for things like depression, EPA is the superior form. When it comes to cognitive enhancement, there are several controlled clinical trials showing cognitive enhancement with omega-3s, but you need a high dose. You need probably need 3,000 milligrams of EPA plus DHA. The ratio used was two parts EPA to one part DHA. And that effect was enhanced by alpha-lipoic acid, which is a commonly widely available antioxidant at a dose of about 600 milligrams a day. Alpha-lipoic acid also enhances ACE2, and it does that through a different mechanism by decreasing the breakdown and the shedding of ACE2 from cells. So I would say core supplements, just to summarize it, vitamin D, 2,000 to 6,000 IUs a day. Curcumin, 750 to 1,000 milligrams a day. Resveratrol, 400 to 600 milligrams a day. Fish oil, supplying 3,000 milligrams of EPA plus DHA per day. And alpha-lipoic acid, about 600 milligrams a day.
Okay, and then there's the mitochondria, which appear to be hit hard by COVID-19. That's the energy factory within the cell. And restoring mitochondrial function is something, there's a lot of nutritional components to that.
Right, and the single nutrient that's been the most studied is coenzyme Q10. And there you need, it needs to be spread out during the day. If you're using the CoQH, the ubiquinol, the reduced form, 100 milligrams twice a day may do it. If you're using ubiquinone, you're going to need it at least three times a day. And it wouldn't hurt to do four times a day. That is in the prevention of migraine, which is a mitochondrial dysfunction disorder, 400 milligrams a day.
It's funny because it's a fat-soluble nutrient. And for example, you don't need to take vitamin D in divided doses through the day usually, right? But CoQ10...
That may have to do with absorption.
Okay.
The need to spread it out. And many years ago, Stephen Sinatra, who had written a book about coenzyme Q10, said to me, yeah, you really need to spread it out during the day. Don't take it all at once.
Okay.
Clinical trials have used multiple doses, not a single high dose.
Okay.
So then B vitamins, really important for mitochondrial function, especially niacin, vitamin B3. Now there's a whole kind of network of practitioners and patients who are using a niacin protocol to treat long COVID. And I don't necessarily adhere to all the components, everything that they're recommending in that protocol, but I think that if niacin does work, it's probably working because it does two things. One is it enhances the activity of mitochondrial complex 1, which starts with niacin, and it also is enhancing the activity of the brain's formation of a restorative factor called BDNF, or brain-derived neurotrophic factor.
How high do you have to go with the niacin? Now, do you have to go to the flushing dose that's used for cardiovascular prevention?
Probably you have to flush, but I don't think that's... I haven't seen any systematic studies on that.
Okay.
And it is possible that it doesn't have to be niacin itself, that it could be, nicotinamide mononucleotide.
NMN or NOR.
NMN. Maybe even some of the other forms of niacin.
Nicotinamide riboside. But, you know, that.
Riboside, yeah. Maybe even NAD itself. Prior to COVID-19, I'd seen some pretty good results in about 15 or 20% of people who are using NAD for improvement in fatigue. So and then riboflavin also is. See, one of the things niacin. One of the things that mitochondrial complex 1 depends on, not only niacin, it depends on glutathione, which rescues it from free radical damage and oxidative stress, which are actually the result of its own activity. So N-acetylcysteine, or NAC, which is a precursor of glutathione, or even taking glutathione, either intravenously or in a liposomal form, can enhance the activity of mitochondrial complex 1.
Which leads to NAD
production.
Those
are all measures worth
exploring. One of the energy fuels of the body.
Right. NAD, just... mitochondrial function, I think, is way too complicated for us to get into now. I mean, we could spend hours talking about what happens in the mitochondria. It's just that it's damaged, that mitochondrial complex 1 is probably damaged. That starts the whole process of energy production. And actually, the mitochondria produce about 70 to 80% of the ATP that your cells need to function.
And you also referenced NT factor, which is the glycerophospholipids that are in NT factor as a plausible therapy. I mean, helpful for some forms of chronic fatigue, Gulf War syndrome. There have been some studies. And you...
I've had some good results with... with NT factors over the years in people with CFS. And it hasn't been looked at in the context of COVID-19, but definitely something worth exploring when there's chronic, when fatigue and brain fog are major symptoms.
Okay, so moving on, I think we touched upon, you know, the... ACE2 support and mitochondrial support. Now you're talking about repairing organs. And the organs most effective are probably the brain and the lungs, perhaps the nerves and, you know, peripheral neuropathy, the, you know, certainly the smell apparatus and taste apparatus. What do you do for those?
Well, there's an interesting study about smell, the sense of smell. And there is a clinical trial going on at Mount Sinai in New York based upon previous research that was done at Stanford and Emory University. Those researchers studied people who had undergone surgery on the in the area at the base of the brain where the pituitary gland is. And people commonly develop loss of smell after that. And giving them fish oils, EPA and DHA, after the surgery significantly reduced the loss of smell. So it's definitely something, if you have anosmia associated with COVID-19, you should definitely be on omega-3s. they not only may help the anosmia in terms of recovery, they're anti-inflammatory. They can help your brain recover. They actually can stimulate the formation of new nerve cells in the part of the brain involved in memory, the hippocampus. In adults, the hippocampus is one of two areas in the brain where you can actually generate new cells.
That's the memory
center.
And the
omega-3s, the memory center, right. The omega-3s help with that. So they're, I think, really critically important for long COVID. Alpha-lipoic acid is one of the nutrients that is most helpful for healing neuropathy. And I believe that the anosmia, the loss of smell that occurs after COVID-19.
Yeah, it's a form of neuropathy.
Is a type of neuropathy. So the neuropathy protocol that I use, which I recommend for anosmia or parosmia, where the smell is all distorted, mm-hmm. And also for painful neuropathies, is alpha-lipoic acid about 600 milligrams a day, generally 300 milligrams twice a day. Safe to go higher. B vitamins, especially vitamin B1, mm-hmm. thiamine at a dose of about 100 milligrams a day.
There's a lipid form called benfotiamine, which is used for neuropathy.
Yeah, that's what I generally use.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, benfotiamine. You have to be careful with vitamin B6. If you overdose on vitamin B6, yep. you can aggravate neuropathy.
Exactly. Get a sensory neuropathy.
And most of the neuropathies that I've seen post-COVID have been sensory. And then there's a mushroom called lion's mane and lion's mane polysaccharides, mm-hmm. which you mostly read about them in the context of the brain,
right?
But very helpful for peripheral neuropathy.
That's interesting because it's used to counteract chemo brain after chemotherapy.
Right. Neuroprotective,
yeah.
but actually quite good for peripheral neuropathies.
Cool.
Methyl and vitamin B12, methyl B12, and methylfolate. Also.
Right. Is there a methylation component to healing long COVID? Because some people with faulty methylation, does that make it worse?
You know, so far, I don't think that's been adequately studied.
Okay.
The methylation thing is something that I began studying in 1984. I got really fascinated with it after reading an article in a British journal called The Lancet, and then meeting with a biological psychiatrist who is at University of Alabama in Birmingham when I went down there and reviewing this whole methylation thing, and it became clear to me that this was really important, especially for the brain. There was this article in The Lancet called Methylation and Mood, and so I started looking at all of the different pathways and trying to create a kind of map of the methylation, of all the methylation pathways. So I couldn't find it all in one place. Mm-hmm. Eventually, of course, this became very trendy in integrative medicine. Sometimes a little overstated,
right.
I think. And a little kind of rigid in interpretations.
But
methylation is definitely...
In studying it, did it end up being like crap's last tape? You know, you sort of like... it's just kept ramifying and ramifying and ramifying to the point where you said, there's some things that... Some uncertainties here that it's a little hard to nail down.
Oh, there are a lot of uncertainties. And, frankly, just because somebody has a methylation deficit doesn't necessarily mean that they don't detoxify, that they're going to have worse yeast problems,
or worse COVID.
Or COVID problems, or worse Lyme problems. It's methylation is part of a much larger series of events, and I do think that there is value to looking at methylation-related pathways. And there are services that will do this for you.
For genetic analysis and so on.
Genetic analysis, and there's something useful there, but it's not written in stone.
Okay. Let's pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. This is actually part three of a four-part podcast on the subject of long COVID. And we're going to continue in part four with some strategies for restoring brain function. Our guest, Dr. Leo Gallant, he has some detailed protocols. If you have long COVID, you may want to direct your healthcare practitioner to them. These are free resources at Dr. Gallant's website, and they're really quite good. Some are directed to sophisticated lay people. Others are directed to a medical audience. But they're very, very important, and we appreciate your generosity in making these resources free, Dr. Gallant. So we'll pause now, and we'll be right back. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.